Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J. DeJohn, the host of the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, and this is a Saturday night special episode. Saturday night specials come along when I have something to share with you that's not a regularly scheduled episode of the show. I always schedule them to drop at 6:59 p.m. because that's 1859 in military time, and February 14th, 1859 was the day our state was founded. This particular Saturday night special is a recording of a radio appearance on The Wake Up Call with Bill London and Gary Snyder on KPNW Radio, 1150 AM, 93.7 FM, out of Eugene. It's the morning show. KPNW has been kind enough to give me permission to rebroadcast it on my podcast, and so I am doing so. By the way, I'm kind of a regular on The Wake Up Call. I'm on the air with Bill and Gary once a month, and it's usually the first Monday of the month at 6:30 AM. If you're around Central Lane County, tune us in. If not, you can always catch me on their stream. Go to kpnw.com and click the red Listen Now button at the top right. This episode aired on June 12th of 2024, and the topic was the interstate homecoming adventure of Silverton's legendary Bobby the Wonder Dog, the Scotch Collie pup that got lost in Illinois on a family road trip and basically walked home through 2,500 miles home to Silverton. Well, here it comes.
Quietly, get ready.
It's so terribly happy to have all of you with us right now.
That music can only mean one thing. Finn John from Offbeat, Oregon, joins us now on the Wake Up Call. Good morning, John. How are you, sir?
Oh, halfway decent plus, I'd say. But, you know, it's early in the day, so, you know, plenty of time for everything to go horribly wrong later on.
Right. So, are you done with school now at the Oregon State University, or do you guys have a couple more weeks?
No, actually, we're in the middle of finals week right now. So,
okay.
There's sort of like, I mean, kind of right now, I'm kind of in the eye of the hurricane. I've just finished up all the kind of like last bits of stuff from the term, and then the big wave of final projects is going to descend upon me at midnight tonight.
Very good. The folks just tune into the show and have no idea who you are and why we bring you on the show, tell everybody your website and what that's all about.
Sure. It's offbeatoregon.com, and it's basically... it's kind of like a side project thing that I took on as a hobby about 15 years ago, and it just kind of like got away from me and out of control. And so at this point, it sucks up many of my leisure time hours. And basically, I'm just constantly on the lookout for weird old stories from Oregon history and interesting, colorful characters. Cautionary tales about horrible people getting their comeuppance, you know, all the classics. When I started this out in like 2008, I thought it was I'd have about 2 or 3 years worth of stuff, and then I would have the subject exhausted. But there's no end in sight.
That's very cool.
Oregon is the gift that.
I've been doing a deep dive lately on
never mind.
Great liars of Oregon. And now, you know, there's a couple of different kinds of liars. I'm talking about what you might call white hat liars, also known as tellers of tall tales. I kind of fell down this rabbit hole with Rube Long from Fort Rock. I was looking up some stuff about him, and he was my gateway liar, I guess you could say. and that led me to a reference to Benjamin Franklin Finn, the patriarch of Finn Rock, who was also a legendary liar, and who at one point actually bamboozled the sister of the Portland Morning Oregonian with a lie and was rewarded with a declaration that he was the damnedest liar in the country. And that is a quote from the Portland Morning Oregonian, which I did not think would publish, you know, the D word back in 1905 or whenever that was. But when they did that, when they proclaimed Benjamin Franklin Finn the biggest liar in the country, a competitor for that title raised his hand and, half-jokingly, I have to assume, threatened to sue the Portland Morning Oregonian for slander for not naming him as the biggest liar in the country. And that led me to Hathaway Jones of the Rogue River. He was a mail carrier for 30 years before he died in an accident on the Rogue River. And Hathaway Jones, I am quite convinced that he is the biggest liar of all time, present company accepted, of course. Sorry, I couldn't resist that one. Anyway, yeah, so Hathaway Jones was, to give you kind of an idea of what this guy was like, first of all, he had a hair lip, and his name wasn't really Hathaway. It was Ivan Hathaway Jones. He went by his middle name, and he had a hair lip. So, you know, I don't want to do a hair lip imitation on the air, but you can do one in your mind and see. This guy was owning his condition, and he used it to his advantage, because what he would do is he would look right at you, and he'd start out by saying, you wouldn't believe this, but, and then he would launch into a story. And it would start out pretty ordinary, and then it would get progressively more and more crazy, and at a certain point in the conversation, you would suddenly realize that you had gotten, like a frog being boiled, you had started buying Whoppers from this guy. And he never changed his face. He looked straight at you, and in his odd speech, deadly earnest, telling just the most amazing Whoppers. And his reputation was such that in 1937, when he died, the Oregonian actually published a very lengthy and melancholy obituary on the editorial page about him. Because people like to go to the Rogue River, you know, and what he did, he delivered the mail on mule strings, because there wasn't a road up the Rogue River. So this was the most remote part of Oregon. And, you know, he would go from cabin to cabin. He would stop at each place and go inside and have a cup of coffee. And, of course, tell some lies. And, of course, once he got a reputation for being a legendary liar, he started having a little bit of trouble coming up with content, right? I mean, he'd talk about himself, but that gets old. And he started talking about his father and his grandfather and, you know, their stories. He turned his grandfather into a sort of a wild animal whisperer with a pet bobcat and a pet raven. I'm going to have to talk more about Hathaway Jones and a little bit later, because the reason that I bring him up is because one of his stories, which was actually the favorite of a folklorist named Arthur Dorn, who got it from him in 1925 at the Agnes boat landing, was about a pair of hunting hounds that he had, which he reluctantly sold to a sport hunter from back east in Virginia, and they ran away from the sport hunter and tracked him all the way across the country, raising a family along the way. And they showed up at his cabin 2 years after they left, after they ran away in Virginia, with six little puppies. And of course, Hathaway told it. I mean, I'm giving you kind of the Cliff Notes version, which means that it's not going to be nearly as rewarding to hear the way Hathaway told it. But the thing about this story is the original that Hathaway based it on is so much more interesting in my book than anything that anyone could make up. It's a bigger whopper than even the great Hathaway Jones could spin. He couldn't improve on it. I mean, he made it bigger. He wasn't able to make it better. Sometimes real life really is crazier than the biggest, you know, the greatest liar of all time's greatest lie. So it was based basically, so he told this story in 1925. In 1924, the national news were full of the news of an amazing situation that had happened to a dog named Bobby the Wonder Dog. The Wonder Dog, of course, was a moniker that he acquired in the course of doing this. But what had happened is that now Bobby the Wonder Dog was a Scotch Collie, and he tracked his owner's home 2,500 miles from Indiana after he got lost during a family road trip. And unlike Hathaway Jones, you know, doggy Bonnie and Clyde yarn about his two hunting hounds, the story of Silverton Bobby is proven and documented. It really happened, and it's kind of amazing. And there's lots of books out about it. I'm sure that listeners have maybe read a few of them. But, so Bobby the Wonder Dog is actually the most famous celebrity in the town of Silverton, Oregon, which is saying something, because that town has actually been home to Clark Gable and Homer Davenport and probably a couple other people I'm forgetting about right
Ginger
now.
Ginger Rogers.
Ginger Rogers? Really? I did not know that.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep, she died there.
Huh. Well, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, you need to look that up. It's pretty cool.
I definitely need to look that up. There seems to be a show business kind of like thing with Silverton. A woman named Vera Polson was a friend of my parents, and she was formerly a Ziegfeld Follie. She retired to Silverton out on the S-curves there. But anyway, so in 1923, Silverton is pretty trendy today. It's got a buzzing downtown, food trucks, hipsters, the works. But in 1923, it was basically just a little quiet timber and sawmill town with some farms out on the valley side. And the timber and lumber mill operators kept Silverton hopping with hordes of hungry young men in cork boots looking for reasonable dining options all the time. So that was one of the best businesses you could have in Silverton was, you know, a cork boot cafe type of thing, right? You know, where a diner where the portions were huge and cheap, and there's a sign in the door that says no corks, so that the boys will take off their cork boots before strolling on in and ruining the floor. Well, one of the most popular ones of these in Silverton was called the Rio Lunch Restaurant, and it was owned by a couple named Frank and Elizabeth Brazier, and their two daughters, well, one of them was Elizabeth's daughter from a previous marriage, Nova Baumgarten, and the other was Leona, and I think she was Leona Brazier. But anyway, the Rio did lots of business, and it did enough business that the Braziers were able to purchase a pretty nice car. It was, at the time, a brand-new 1923 Willys Overland, Willys Overland 92, Model 92, one of a new series of mid-market cars that were marketed as the Bird cars. And depending on the color of your Model 92, it was a Bluebird, a Blackbird, or a Redbird, and the Braziers was red. So after they bought this car, they packed a family into it and headed east for a family vacation road trip. Destination, Wolcott, Indiana. Now, remember, it's 1923, and even brand new, really nice cars like the Redbird were not very reliable, and road conditions could be awful, and the cars required a lot of maintenance and couldn't really be left out in the weather. So as the family headed out from Silverton with Bobby on top of the luggage in the back or riding on a running board or whatever, the plan was to stop well before dark each night in a town big enough to have a mechanic's garage and service station where they could park the car undercover for the night. It's like putting the buggy and team up at a livery stable, you know, in an earlier day. So then they would walk to a hotel for the night. So they went on their way for several weeks, driving east this way, and they were almost to their destination in Indiana, about 2,300 miles into the trip, when Frank was gassing up the Redbird at a service station, and a pack of local mongrels spotted Bobby and jumped him. And the last that Frank saw of Bobby, he was running at top speed with three snarling dogs in hot pursuit. And Frank figured, well, you know, Bobby can take care of himself. Most likely he and the Indiana dogs would have a little tussle, become best friends, spend the rest of the day, you know, playing and chasing cats, and that Bobby would be back at the hotel where, you know, where the Braziers were staying later that night. Only, well, he wasn't. So the Braziers took an extra day or two in that town to search for Bobby, driving around town, advertising in the local newspaper, hollering for him, couldn't find him. So they left instructions to hang on to him if he reappeared, and they continued on their trip. They figured that they would pick him up on the way back home. but he still wasn't around when they came back through. So, regretfully, the Braziers continued on their way, leaving instructions to send him home in a rail car at their expense if he should turn up. These instructions appear to have been ignored when Bobby turned up a month or two later, trying to pick up their trail. I haven't quite figured out how that worked out. Maybe they couldn't catch him. I don't know. But obviously this has to have cast a pretty awful pall over the rest of the Braziers road trip. Anybody who's ever had a beloved pet disappear knows the feeling. You know, you're hoping for the best, but you know it's probably, you know, something bad happened. So a week or two later, the Brazier family was back home helping cook stacks of hotcakes and slabs of beefsteak for hungry loggers and the mill workers in the Rio lunch. And 6 months later, exactly 6 months later, Nova, one of their daughters, was walking down the street in Silverton with a friend, and suddenly she spotted a familiar-looking dog coming out of a shrub. And she said, "Oh, isn't that Bobby?" And it was Bobby. He was sore of foot, a matted of coat, badly underweight, and his toenails worn down to the quick. That's like a quote from the newspapers, toenails worn down to the quick, which I think means his toenails were bleeding, although I'm not 100% sure.
We have a minute and a half.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Oh, yes. Anyway, yeah, so he had tracked the family all the way back and showed up, and he became a celebrity. Visited all of the livery stables on the way back, and after the reunion, the Humane Society in Portland did a bunch of research and figured out what his path was like. He became a star. He was an exhibit at Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in Newport. He was a movie star in the silent film The Call of the West in 1924. He ended up dying in 1927 after getting sick, and he's buried in the Humane Society's pet cemetery up in Portland. And he's become the inspiration also for the Silverton Kiwanis Club's annual pet parade, which happened in May. And, of course, he inspired Hathaway Jones to try to top his story, and arguably it didn't work. That's Silverton's Bobby the Wonder Dog.
Bobby the Wonder Dog.
Yes, indeed.
I love it.
All right, Finn, thank you so much for the story. So unfortunately, we're just out of time today. One more time, give out your website, and we'll chat with you next month.
Oh, yeah, it's offbeatoregon.com.
All right, Finn John on the wake-up call this morning.
That wraps up this Offbeat Oregon Saturday Night Special episode. Thank you once again for tuning in. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. You've been listening to a recording of a radio appearance on KPNW Radio's Wake Up Call with London and Snyder, the morning show. You can find out more details about the story I was talking with the boys about by going to offbeatoregon.com, clicking the blue directory button at the top right, and scrolling to June 2nd, 2024. Or you can search for it by hashtag keyword. Hashtag RinTinTin, as in the Hollywood dog, will take you right to it. Yes, RinTinTin was involved in this story, tangentially, but he's famous enough that he merits a hashtag. By the way, if you've checked out my other podcasts that I started doing early this year, the Penny Dreadful Radio Hour, thank you. If you haven't yet, I hope you will consider doing so. I have been having a thundering good time doing that podcast, and every week I dope out new ways to make it more enjoyable of an experience for everybody. Basically, I'm rotating through a roster of 6 classic Penny Dreadful scandal story papers from the 1840s and 1850s in London. The Crimes of Sweeney Todd, The Adventures of Highwayman Dick Turpin, The Ballet Girl Melodramas of Rose Mortimer, stuff like that. Check it out when you can. It's a 1-hour show. It drops on Saturday nights, and I predict that you are going to enjoy it thoroughly. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. You can check out more about them at atlasstringband.com. Regular episodes of Offbeat Oregon History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Unless, of course, you stream. Either way, it'll be ready to go before you know it, and until it is, go out and fill up the rest of the weekend with good stuff. Bye now!